Good evening. If you would get your outline out and open your Bibles to the book of Hosea. There are some names that if I had, I would certainly change. If my name were Hitler, I would change it. Or Judas. My parents hated me enough to call me Judas. I think that would be a time I would change my name. Benedict Arnold, although that name isn't as popular anymore, or as infamous, I should say. The word for today, of course, is name, if you're keeping track, or names. And what's in a name? Many people have asked that question. Many individuals, even young people especially, ask, what's the importance of a name? And I asked the same question because my grandfather, he carried the Reno name. And I know there's other Renos in the United States. No, I am not related to most of them, especially the most popular ones are the ones people know, like Janet Reno. No, she is not my cousin or my aunt, any relation whatsoever to me. But I do have some family, especially in this area, in Van Wert, I believe it was. We met some individuals who were family, cousins or something to my grandfather, which was interesting. But my grandfather, he wanted boys in the family to carry on the name, and I never really understood that. And my uncle, of course, had no children, and my dad, who's their only two children, only had me and my sister. And so I was the one who was going to carry on the name, and I didn't understand that. And for them, it was a progeny thing. It was a genetic thing, I suppose, and I'm not sure that's the greatest thing, because my heritage goes back to train robbers. Interesting, but not all that useful. But the Proverbs writer in Proverbs 22 and verse 1 uses name in a different way. Not just as a last name, but more importantly, a good name. He says that a good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, loving favor rather than silver and gold. We put our stock in money in this world, especially today. But you don't have to go too far back in even American history to know that a good name went a long way, that it went far. That if you were received a bad name because of your reputation, because of the things that you did, that you couldn't do a whole lot afterwards, that there wouldn't be a lot of trust involved, and you wouldn't have a lot of opportunities. And so the silver and gold you might get from being dishonest, the riches you might acquire by taking advantage of people, was not worth the loss of a good name. You have individuals like David and Josiah who have good names, and you would be honored to name your child maybe after those individuals. And then you have individuals like Ahab and Jezebel, whom the Bible does not speak highly of. And individuals even today, in conflict with the Bible, and angry with the Bible, sometimes name their children that. Who wants to name your child Jezebel or Ahab? Just the connotation you give them. God, Psalm chapter 8 and verse 1, has a good name. He says, O Lord, how excellent is your name in all the earth. Who have set your glory above the heavens? And the Proverbs, or the psalmist, David, he speaks highly of God's name again and again, exalting it and telling about how wonderful and magnificent and glorious it is. And as far as the name goes, I think God is an excellent name, Jehovah God. The prophets' names oftentimes had significance. Hosea, especially as we look at Hosea chapter 1, his name means salvation. And we notice if you go back to Numbers chapter 13... in verse 16, it's actually the name Joshua had before Moses changed it. In Numbers chapter 13. In verse 16 it reads, "These are the names of the men whom Moses sent to spy out the land, and Moses called Hoshea," or Hosea, "the son of Nun, Joshua." So his name was formerly Hosea. His name was the same as this prophet's name. It meant salvation. And Moses, whether by divine authority or on his own, renamed the man Joshua, which is a part of that original name. It just added the Je, which in the Hebrew adds the idea of God. And that means that God is salvation. And so Joshua's name became God is salvation. And it was the whole point of the book of Joshua is not the people are their own salvation. It is, in fact, God is the salvation. God is the one doing these things. And so Hosea draws back, and his name just means salvation. Names in the Old Testament often mean something. Adam, which a lot of people miss, is the Hebrew word for man or human. Literally, Adam. And that's his name. God's like, this is man. So I'm going to name him man. Now I would name my son man. It'd be the same thing. You could say, call him Adam. Eve, in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 20, she's called Eve because she's the mother of all living. The word Eve means life. It means, ultimately, life giver even. In Genesis chapter 25 and verse 25, Esau is named him is named what he is because the man is hairy, or the child, technically, is hairy. And so they named him Esau. And Jacob, because he grabbed his brother's heel. And the idea is usurper, but literally it means to grab the heel of another. It means to take them down and take their position is the idea in the Hebrew from the word Jacob. And so these names mean something, especially God's name. And in the Old Testament, what you had in the Hebrew, and even in the Septuagint, when Jesus would go and he would read the law, right? When they would go and they would gather together and they would read from the books of the law or from the prophets, and the word Jehovah was there, they would replace it with Adonai even. They didn't even want to say Jehovah's name. They didn't want to speak it on their lips. They reverenced it so much. And anymore, we have no reverence for the name of God. And we've even today soiled it with the way that we talk, with how the expletives just come out of people's mouths. And sometimes they apologize afterwards. And I just want to say, you're apologizing to the wrong person. You didn't offend me. You're offending a much more important person. And in Hosea chapter 1, starting in verse 1, he says, "The word of the Lord that came to Hosea the son of Beeri, in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah, and in the days of Jeroboam, the sons of Joash, king of Israel." And Hosea is very good at, right here in the beginning, just like Amos was. The reason we went Amos, and we took a break, and we go to Hosea, because Hosea is the very next prophet. He says the exact same people, and in fact adds a few more afterwards, because Amos was during Uzziah and Jotham, and I believe Ahaz, and then Hosea is unto Hezekiah, the kings of Judah. And so he travels longer, or he's a prophet for a longer period of time. And it says, "When the Lord began to speak by Hosea, the Lord said to Hosea, 'Go, take yourself a wife of harlotry and children of harlotry, for the land has committed great harlotry by departing from the Lord.'" And this isn't necessarily to the degree that he's taking a family that's already established, a woman and her children, because what happens, we find out later on in these verses, is that in fact children are born to Gomer anyway. We don't know exactly the lineage, we don't know the fatherhood of the individuals because of what transpires, but at least the idea that this woman that he marries named Gomer would be, he says, a wife of harlotry. And the idea was, if you take a wife of harlotry, you'll end up with children of harlotry. Now, this is a very, very, very strong study. And God's willingness to use human beings for His glory. Hosea doesn't get to choose his wife. Something that many individuals today in America consider a right. The ability to choose my own spouse hasn't been there for a long time. The Israelites oftentimes were given in marriage. Even up into many cultures even today, there is no, I get to choose my own spouse. My spouse is chosen for me, and we work it out however we can. And we do what is required of us to make it work. And he says that these individuals, that this man Hosea, he is a prophet, but he's a prophet not only in the fact that he prophesies, but more importantly also that he's an example to the people. And that's a harsh example to take. That should give us an idea of, as Christians, how far are we willing to go with this? How far are we willing to take our service to God? And he says, "You are going to be an example of my relationship with Israel." That is such a smack in the face, but completely warranted according to what's taking place in this time frame. God's name, as excellent as it is, as amazing and magnificent, and as reverent as the Israelites supposedly made it, they were soiling God's good name. And that's what he says. He says there at the end of verse 2, go take yourself a wife of harlotry and children of harlotry, for the land has committed great harlotry by departing from the Lord. He says, you're an object lesson. My relationship with the Israelites is going to be manifest in your relationship with your wife. And what we'll find in the near future in Hosea is, Gomer does what harlots do. She goes and she runs off and she goes back to her lifestyle. And she continues in this, and to the degree that it doesn't seem like Hosea is really sure about the parentage of his children. And yet he takes responsibility for them. And yet he names them. And in some cases he takes them around and he teaches them things. And he's a father to them. And that should tell us something about God. That's the relationship that some individuals have with God. That's the relationship, frankly, that we had with God. We were illegitimate children. And God took us in, even at his own difficulty. He goes on to talk about how the Israelites, and he will in the next few chapters, talk about how the Israelites have soiled his name, but for now all he says is, this is what has happened. The Israelites have given me a bad name, and we've got to rectify this. And so, when this woman gives birth, this woman named Gomer, verse 3, so he went and took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim, and she conceived and bore him a son. Then the Lord said to him, call his name Jezreel, for in a little while I will avenge the bloodshed of Jezreel on the house of Jehu, and bring an end to the kingdom of the house of Israel. It shall come to pass in that day that I will break the bow of Israel on the valley of Jezreel. Now, he names his son Jezreel. It has nothing to do with what the word means, because it's in fact a location. It's the location in 1 Kings chapter 10 where Ahab's 70 sons were slaughtered. It's also a location very close to Megiddo. And if you know anything about Bible geography, Megiddo is a location, is a valley where a very prominent King Josiah ends up dying. A very amazing king, started very young. And he does a great deal to bring about the worship of God and take down the altars and the high places and the Baals and the Ashtaroths, and makes one really, really, really bad decision, goes against what God tells him to do through a prophet, and ends up dying for it. And so Megiddo and Jezreel, in a sense, is tied very strongly to those stories, to the things that are going on to the Israelites. And it's going to be a time when reckoning will come. And so he names his son after a location because these people are going to suffer for the consequences of their actions. And this person is going to stand as a witness to that. This person is going to be named after this event taking place. He goes on in verse 6, and she conceived again and bore a daughter. Then God said to him, call her name Lo-Ruhamah. For I will no longer have mercy on the house of Israel, but I will utterly take them away. Yet I will have mercy on the house of Judah, will save them by the Lord their God, and will not save them by bow, nor by sword, or battle, by horses, or horsemen. And so, Lo-Ruhamah obviously means no mercy. And literally in Israel, it means no mercy. So he names his daughter No Mercy. Could you imagine putting that on a birth certificate? What are you naming your daughter? No Mercy. And they kind of laugh at you and giggle because they've heard, you know, similar jokes like that. And you're like, I'm not joking. That's her name. And it has to do with Israel, that the Israelites are not going to receive mercy. Because remember, Hosea is predominantly towards the Israelites. He is predominantly a prophet to Israel. And so he tells them, you are not receiving mercy. And I'm so staunch on this that I'm naming my daughter after this. That I'm naming my daughter in this way. And so that mercy would not come upon Israel, but notice he does say that mercy would come to Judah, but it's not going to come right away. As we keep going in verse 8, now when she had weaned Lo-Ruhamah and conceived and bore a son, then God said, call his name Lo-Ami, for you are not my people, and I will not be your God. And so Lo-Ami obviously means not my people. The Lo obviously means no, we're not. And Ami means people, or my people more particularly. And so to the Israelites, he was saying, no longer are you going to be mine. Now what you need to notice, starting in verse 10 though, is that God's people would bear His name once more. For a time, they would not be His people. That God would put them aside. He would put them away where they belong, and they would be punished for this time. And if you remember back to not only Daniel, but you talk back to Amos, all this was done to reestablish God's glory, was to reestablish His name among the people, was to cleanse the slate, you might say, of the bad things that people were chalking up to God, because these Israelites were bad people. They weren't doing the things of God. And so in verse 10 he says, "Yet the number of the children of Israel shall be as the sand of the sea, which cannot be measured or numbered. And it shall come to pass in the place where it was said to them, 'You are not my people,' there it shall be said to them, 'You are sons of the living God.'" So there's a time, sometime in the future, which is one of the things the prophets are very good about, God ultimately is very good about, there's bad stuff coming. There is some horrible events. You're not going to receive any mercy from me for a time, but come the time, when the time does come, you will receive mercy. The people of Israel will be my people again in that sense. And it's going to happen, he says, in the place where it was said to them, "You are not my people." And in verse 11, "Then the children of Judah and the children of Israel shall be gathered together and appoint for themselves one head. And they shall come up out of the land, for great will be the day of Jezreel. Say to your brethren, 'My people,' and to your sisters, 'Mercy is shown.'" That's what he's telling the people at the time. Hosea comes in and he says, there will be a time when God will make you His people again. Ami. Right? You won't be low on me anymore. You'll be Ami. And when that happens, it won't be no mercy. It won't be lo rumah. It'll be rumah. You'll have mercy now. That you'll be with me. That you'll be my people. And we'll get back to this thing we call a relationship. And as we look forward into Hosea, as we continue reading in Hosea and studying Hosea, we'll see that as she departs and she goes off into her harlotry, that God, after a while, tells Hosea, go get your wife. Go bring her back. And a lot of people would say, let her go. Just be done with her. And the ironic thing is, many Israelites would have done that very thing. They would have said, you know what? Hosea, this woman's running off on you. Let her go. And God would have said, that's exactly the problem. Because you're talking about you. Because you've run off on me. You've run off to Baals and Ashtaroths, and you're worshiping in the high places, and you're only mine in name. And that's the bad part of this. Isaiah chapter 11. In verse 11 it says, "It shall come to pass in that day that the Lord shall set His hand again the second time to recover the remnant of His people who are left from Assyria and Egypt, from Pathros and Cush and Elam and Shinar, from Hamath and the islands of the sea. He will set up a banner for the nations and will assemble the outcasts of Israel and gather together the dispersed of Judah from the four corners of the earth." What's he talking about? He's talking about Christ. He's talking about a time when not only for these individuals, the Israelites, the northern 10 tribes and the southern 2 tribes would be one again. And it wouldn't be in some grand and fantastic way, because the nations, for the most part, were utterly demolished. There would be a remnant. But even the word for remnant means leftover. It means people who managed to survive, basically. And for the northern 10 tribes, that is absolutely the case. But at one point in the future, God promises that the people would be reestablished, that they would come back together. And in that, from Ezekiel, that stick, if you remember, that was broken in two, God would mend it once more. But it wouldn't just be the two pieces of the stick, the 12 tribes of Israel. It wouldn't be the northern 10 and the southern 2 tribes. They would be restored. He would put those back together. But Ephesians 2 and Colossians 2 both say that it would involve the Gentiles as well. That God's people at that time would no longer be just Israel. That it would take a new name. A new name would be given them. And in Romans chapter 16, in verse 16, a new name is given them. I'm sorry, that's not right. It's not Romans 16. It should be Acts 16. Acts I've got the wrong verse there. They were called Christians first at Antioch. What's that?
11:26.
Thank you. I wrote that down wrong. Yeah, thank you. Acts 11:26. And when he had found him, he brought him to Antioch. So it was that for the whole year they assembled with the church and taught a great many people, and the disciples were first called Christians at Antioch. God's people had a new name. They had the name that God had intended them to have. That it no longer revolved around one individual in the Old Testament, the man named Jacob, who was renamed Israel by God. It no longer had to do with Abraham's descendants, which is John the Baptizer's point in Luke chapter 3. It no longer had to do with the separation of covenants, the Gentiles from the Jews. It had to do with God bringing all of the people together. And as such, we have a new name. But just as the Israelites could soil that name, so can we. We can soil the name of Christ. We can give it a bad reputation. And friends, many people in the past have done exactly that. And we fight and we struggle so hard with people because others give Christ a bad name. Because people teach wrong things. Because for instance, the wars that have gone on over religion. It didn't start with the Catholic Church, friends. It started with Rome. Then in 350, Rome had an emperor who was a Christian. And as Christianity progressed into being more and more popular, very soon they started persecuting other religions. Jesus didn't do that. He didn't come in and start smacking people around who had other faiths, who had other beliefs. He taught them, and he taught his disciples to teach them. But he also taught his disciples to love those individuals, not kill them. And yet it didn't take people very long to take it way too far. And you go into the Crusades. When it was God's will that these things be done. No, it wasn't. And people making decisions just like that are in some ways why we're in the situation we are today. Why when you talk about Christ, why when you talk about Christianity, why when you talk about the Bible, no one thinks of anything but the Crusades and how evil God is because of people that represented Him. Folks have given God a bad name. But we can do something about that. We can help reestablish God's good name. We know that God is merciful and just. We know that God is loving and kind and compassionate and severe. We know the truth of God's will. And it is our job to share that with people. It is our job as Christians to tell people why we are Christians and what it means to be a Christian. And it doesn't matter what those people did 500, 1,000 years ago. What matters is what Christians are doing now, is what true believers in Christ, how they represent the name of Christ. And friends, in a lot of circumstances, it's not good still. Now, we don't kill people anymore, but we're willing to do every other abominable thing known to man. We're willing to live lives not in keeping with Christ, not dedicated to Christ, not owned by Christ, and yet use His name, and yet walk around with a giant crucifix. The world has no place for that. Christianity has no place for that. God has no place for that. We cannot be individuals who give God a bad name and yet use His name as if it matters. If we're going to speak His name, it needs to be in reverence. If we're going to call on His authority, it needs to be by His authority. And if we're going to call ourselves Christians, we've got to change the way we live to actually somewhat resemble Christ. Because friends, too often it just doesn't. And we fall into the same condemnation that those in Hosea's time fell into. These individuals were pretending to be gods. They carried His name around. They used it as some kind of totem, as a token of God's ability. And they threw it around, and they threw it around, and they threw it around, and after a while they found out it didn't make God very happy, that they didn't respect what God had given them. each of us carries a name with us. And if we have been washed in His blood, we carry that name in our hearts. But we have to carry it in our lives, in our minds, in our very being. If you this day don't want to be like the harlots that take place, the harlotry that takes place back in Hosea, if you don't want God to have to come up with an analogy for you that has to do with harlotry, because that's what He did with the Israelites. It's not pretty. And the book of Hosea is not nice. But what it is absolutely the truth. And too often it's the truth in today. We've got to change, friends. And we've got to let others know that the world of Christianity is changing. That the name of God has a place in the world. And it is the highest esteem. We've got to live as if we absolutely believe it and pursue it with everything we have. If you are wanting to join this congregation in doing that, if you want to start that walk or you want to continue in that walk, now is the time to be cleansed of your sins. To walk away from the life that you've been living in harlotry and idolatry, in whatever sin that you've been entrapped. Whatever the case might be, wherever your life is headed, you can change. And if you need encouragement, if you need comfort, if you need help in times of need, friends, we're here to help. The people of God are here to assist in whatever way you need. I pray that you would come while we stand and while we sing.